This episode is brought to you by the Michigan Cherry Committee. Learn more about the wonderfully tart Montmorency cherry at choosecherries.com.
HRN is offering complimentary business memberships to 50 Black, Indigenous, people of color-owned food businesses this summer. The deadline to apply is July 31st. Each business membership, a $500 value, is an advertising opportunity that will allow businesses disproportionately impacted by COVID-19 to connect with HRN's listening community and promote their work. To apply and review the terms and conditions, go to heritageradionetwork.org/biz.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum, and I love to talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. If you're just tuning in for the first time, all the previous episodes can be found in the archives at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm thankful for listeners like you, and I'd love it if you'd leave me a review wherever you find this podcast. For those of you with kids at home, I've been working on a new podcast here at Heritage Radio Network. Along with my co-host, Hannah Forden, the program manager at HRN, we've created Time for Lunch, a fun, food-focused show for kids. We're aiming to release a new episode every week, and we'd love it if you'd check it out wherever you get your podcasts. I'd also like to remind listeners that Heritage Radio is a nonprofit, and we need your help to stay on the air. If you enjoy this show and listen to the other great podcasts we produce every week, please find your way to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to make your gift today. Today's theme: grow your own and help your neighbors. From regrowing scallions on your windowsill, to tomatoes on the fire escape, to fully tilling up your lawn to grow food, this spring there's been an explosion of home gardening during the global pandemic. Whether it's a response to scarcity in the markets or wanting to stay home and not be in public, or take on more self-sufficiency, people all over are growing more and more food. I had a great conversation over the weekend with Lucy Lesser, a dear friend who I will totally have on my zombie apocalypse team when the time comes. For the past 8 years, she's been growing loads of her own food in Brooklyn. She's adamant that everyone has room to grow something, even if you don't have any outdoor space. This spring, she distributed over 1,500 seedlings to other people in her neighborhood so they too can grow something. It's fun and rewarding to grow even one or two plants yourself, especially if you can eat it.
My name is Lucy Lesser. I live in Brooklyn, New York. I live in Bed-Stuy, and I am professionally, I'm a producer and director in like the documentary space. My work outside of like my paid job revolves around growing food and gardening and helping other people get the materials they need and the knowledge they might need, or try to connect people to make that happen as well.
Got it. Very cool. And how long have you been gardening and growing food for yourself?
This is my 8th year having a garden in Brooklyn. I've never gardened outside of the city. I actually just popped up like in my Facebook memory, like the first tomato I ever grew that I had picked 8 years ago in my hand. And I was like, gosh, it is crazy. Like how much you learn by doing and how much, my process has changed and how much stronger I feel that it's a really important thing that people connect to in some way.
So what got you started with it? I mean, did you just decide one day, oh, I have some room in my, you know, on my patio or on my fire escape and I just want to grow a tomato?
This is a little bit of a roundabout story, but I grew up in California with my mom. She always had a garden. I hated gardening. I hated chores. I even hated killing the slugs and snails. I also hated tomatoes and refused to ever eat them from the time I was a tiny child. I just thought they were nasty. I hated the way they tasted. Like, ugh, everything about it was disgusting to me. And then, honestly, it wasn't even until maybe my mid to late 20s that I had, like, an heirloom tomato type of situation. And I was like, oh, these are actually delicious. And they are also stupid expensive.
Right.
So once I kind of was fortunate enough to move into an apartment that had outdoor space, I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to grow some tomatoes because I cannot fathom how much people pay for them.
Right.
And actually that, like, I, for a long time, up until really this year's garden, really just tried to grow things that I either couldn't find in stores or that were expensive.
Got it. And what's your process? Do you look at a seed catalog? Do you get seeds from other people? Do you save seeds from really delicious fruits and vegetables that you've eaten?
It's funny you ask. Well, I do all of those things. So I'm actually in a couple kind of like autonomous gardening groups. One of them here in Brooklyn has like a seed and seedling swap every year.
Nice.
I think we do a spring seedling swap, and then I think we've been doing them in the, we did one last year in the fall as well. But yeah, I also like went to North Carolina last summer in July, and they had a tomato festival, and I was like, oh, these tomatoes are delicious. I don't know what they are, but I did save the seeds. And I do order, you know, from a couple catalogs, seeds, but I less and less every year because I do save so many. Although I I'm hoping I can save a lot this year because I actually really almost depleted my own personal seed bank this year.
Right. So you ran a little bit of a program of giving away seedlings for free this year. Is that right?
Yes. So as soon as the pandemic started ramping up in March, I had just been starting my seeds, and also through like basically the neighbor behind me cut down their tree and I was suddenly going to be able to get a lot more light in my yard. So I decided to start twice as many seedlings as I normally would. And then as things started getting really like, you know, for a while in New York, there was just not stuff on the shelves. And there was also just a lot of anxiety about going to stores, which there still is. And,
yeah.
You know, so many people losing their jobs that I was just kind of betting that more people will want to grow their own food. And I really hoped that would be true. I, at the time, was actually completely unemployed also and like very stressed about all those things as well. And I just figured if I could decrease the barrier of entry to gardening for people with free seedlings, that maybe I could help some people change their connection to their food and where their food comes from.
Nice. So, I mean, I guess part of that is remove, I mean, so you talk about the barrier to entry. So when you talk about the difference between starting from seed and starting from a seedling, I guess it's like, you know, having done it myself, I guess, would you describe it as being sort of like when you start from seed, there's so many more things that can go wrong. And by the time a plant is a seedling, at least it, like you've gotten it to a point where you're likely to get success.
Yeah, but I do agree with that. But I also think that seeds, a packet of seed, I have actually I found an amazing seed shop this year in Ohio, and all their seeds are under $2 a packet, and they're all like heirloom and organic.
Huh.
They're really amazing. And I actually wrote the guy a long letter to tell him about my project, and I never heard back. But a packet of seeds that might have 50 tomato seeds is like $2, right?
Right.
And I know that, like, if you go to the shops around here, it's funny because I actually bought a seedling this year for the first time a couple weeks ago, and it was like $10.
Hmm.
And I just, to me, that price is so high if it's something that you don't know if you're good at this, you don't know if you like it, you don't know if it's going to provide you with enough food or any food.
Sure.
So the thought to me was, like, if I could give people seedlings for free and just start them, you know, maybe they died. Or maybe they didn't make it, but if it sparks something within someone, that would make me happy. And it's funny, not to be such a run-on sentence, but I've started getting like photos back from people I have no idea who they are, showing me their yard with like these giant, like well-formed, delightful-looking plants.
That's amazing.
Yeah, between March and... Well, June, I just actually gave away 2 seedlings today. Between March and today, which is, you know, the end of June, I've gotten out over 1,500 seedlings easily.
Wow.
And I don't know how many packets of seeds as well.
And all of those seedlings you started in your New York City apartment and backyard?
Well, to tell you the truth, I would say 85% of them. And then I also connected with some really cool local gardeners who fostered some trays for me as well.
Nice.
Which was really cool because I actually at one point had, you know, a flat of seedlings is about 11 inches by 18 inches, I think, like rectangular. Mm-hmm. And I had definitely like 28 trays going in my house at one point. And it was a really cold spring, so it involved bringing them in and out every single day.
Right, because you want them to go out to get sunlight, right? You, like, take them for a walk.
Yeah, and, like, ideally, you know, like, if I had more resources, I would make a proper grow room with grow lights. And I have grow lights that I can fit maybe two trays, which is, like, kind of enough, or three trays, which is, like, what I would start just for myself. So on the scale that we were doing, we really needed, like, outdoor light.
Right.
I also was, like, really fortunate that... I also was really fortunate that I got a huge donation of seeds from like this amazing woman in Jamaica, Queens, who has a seed library called, she's on Instagram, it's at Reclaim Seed NYC. And they are really, it just, the project could not have happened without her contribution of just like thousands of seeds. And it was just like, I literally got in touch with her through some New York mutual aid groups and explained to her what I was doing, and she just sent me a giant delivery of seeds, which I also have since gone out to like community gardens and made them packages and grown things that I never thought I would want to grow, even because they weren't things I would have ever picked for myself.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about variety.
Yeah.
So, you know, tomato was the first thing, right?
Yes.
But then, like, what do you grow now, and are there things that you have grown over the years that you've kind of either given up on because it's not really, doesn't work that well in an urban environment, or you decided it just wasn't successful?
I think anything is successful in an urban environment.
Okay.
I think my skill or something about the way that I garden, like I just am not good at growing tomatillos. Like, I think I've grown a couple and they just don't do well, but I know other people do grow them in the city because I've seen them grow them. And I've also never successfully grown okra, which has been like a constant failure for me. But oddly enough, I actually gave away this year because someone donated a bunch of old okra seeds and they were like, test these for to see if they germinate. And I did, and they all germinated. And I was like, well, I don't need like 100 okra plants.
Right.
So people came and just picked up germinated seeds, which I thought were really cool. And those are totally thriving at other people's houses. And I killed all of them. And then I planted another round of them and I killed those. And then I planted a third round of those and I killed those.
Sounds like the universe is telling you something about not growing okra.
Yeah, I think that's not for me. Yeah, it doesn't work out. That on the flip side though, I started growing collards for the first time this year and they're insane.
Nice.
So yeah. Do you want, it will take a while, but if you are interested, I can give you the full list of everything I grew.
Yeah. I mean, so let's start with a description of your space. And I mean, you know, you and I know each other and I know your house and I know your backyard.
Yeah.
And I know that when you say, when you talk about where you started out with a patio on the 7th floor. Is that right?
Yeah.
Where your apartment used to be?
A patio that was, like 8 feet wide and like 15 feet or no, maybe, sorry, like 30 feet long.
Right. And then now you have an actual backyard, but a good portion of that yard is concrete.
Yeah, it's actually all concrete. It's nothing's in the, it's all container.
Oh, it's all container. I didn't realize that. I thought there were some parts of it that were actually. So it's all container.
Kind of.
Yeah. So, it's, all container garden on concrete.
For the most part. I have two plants that are not, or three edible plants that are in the ground.
Got it. So I mean, just like a description of the space, I think would be a good start. And then also what, you know, obviously, I mean, I've started to do a little bit more gardening, not quite as prolific as yours, but you know, the things that I've come to kind of, on a very amateurish level understand are very important is a number of hours of sunlight that you get on your space. And in the city, that can be sometimes, I think, hard to determine or understand. Different outside of the city, because in the beginning of spring, you might get tons of sun, and then suddenly a tree that's above you might grow all their leaves and suddenly you're in shade. So it's a little
different. And that was exactly the problem at my setup and exactly what led to growing so many more seedlings this year. Because I'll explain to you my space. I live in a brick row house in Bed-Stuy. I have a very small kind of like front yard that's all concrete. I have in the front I have a fig tree and a horse trough. The horse trough right now has green beans, pumpkins, and carrots in it. And then I garden in like Home Depot style 5 gallon buckets, with dirt in them for the most part. I mean, you can put dirt in pretty much anything. And then I have a couple like window boxes in the front, and then in the backyard, I think it's like 20 feet wide and maybe like 30 feet deep. It might be square, but and a good portion of that is like patio furniture. And then I have my largest bed, and I think this is why you thought or it was in ground, but yeah. Actually, I used to have a shed when I first moved into this house, uh-huh. And there was no reason that I needed a shed that was 9 feet by 9 feet. In New York City, I don't need that space. So I ripped out the shed and it had a cinder block foundation. So then I filled the foundation with dirt.
Okay. Got it. Yep.
And then I have a couple horse troughs in the backyard as well. And I've actually just started experimenting with grow bags this year. And I have just pots and buckets of all sizes that I grow anything in.
What are you growing in the bags? We wanted to grow some potatoes and got some seed potatoes, and then also had some potatoes that just sprouted. And so I had a couple of like IKEA, like schlepping bags that I punched holes in the bottom and filled with dirt and planted the potatoes in those.
I'm very curious to see how that goes, because that's actually one thing that's been on my list to experiment with, was a plastic liner. Yeah. But the ones that I have are like felt grow bags.
Yep.
And I have sweet potatoes in one, and I have like a Japanese eggplant in the other. And the eggplant that's growing in that bag is actually, even though it's in a confined like 7 gallon bag, is much bigger and looks much healthier than the one I have in the garden bed that is a little bit less restricted.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, the potatoes that we planted in the IKEA bags are looking fantastic. I mean, the plants are 3 feet high. One of them has already started to flower.
Wow.
So, yeah, they're coming along. I mean, I had this, like, idea because I was looking at the bags, and I was like, well, I don't use these for anything. Maybe I could plant them. And then, of course, I did a quick Google search, and I found, like, a Monty Don, like, video about growing potatoes in a bag, and I was like, cool, we're gonna grow potatoes in these.
Definitely. No, and actually I think that's the best thing to kind of grow them in, because they need a lot of space if you want a big harvest. Although I grew some in just like a, I think it's like a maybe a 5 gallon tub last year. Maybe it might be slightly bigger than that, like an aluminum tub that you might see somewhere, like with like ice and beer in it.
Yep.
And I grew some regular potatoes in there last year, and they were pretty good. They were successful. That's not something I actually want to grow again, though, I have to say.
Hmm.
Just because, like, white potatoes are not a huge part of my diet, and they are very cheap.
Good point. Yeah. Right. So you were talking earlier about how the things you choose to grow are things that you like to eat that maybe are hard to find, or things that seem expensive, and so you can just grow them yourself.
Yes, or things that I use a ridiculous amount of.
Sure.
So like cilantro, I just go through it like crazy. Basil, I grow through it. Basil is actually a really good example, because I just don't understand why a small clamshell of basil should cost $5.
Right.
And nothing I make, if I'm going to use basil, it's going to be like five of those clamshells.
Right.
So I end up growing, I don't know, last year I had more of a variety of basil. I probably had 6 different kinds of basils last year. And this year I've toned it down, and I think we only have 3 or 4.
Yeah, I feel like one of the things that really sort of opened up for me as I started to become aware of planting my own stuff. I mean, of course, right, having run the Brooklyn Kitchen, and like, I was well aware of there being a huge variety out there of every kind of plant or herb or fruit or vegetable.
Yeah. Right?
But at the same time, I think it's so ingrained in us that, like, when you, if someone says to you, oh, yeah, I have some carrots, the immediate thing that I think of is like a 10 to 12 inch long, bright orange, you know, like inch to inch and a half thick carrot, because that's just how we were raised to identify these things. And so then having this whole world open up and being like, oh, yeah, when you look at like a seed catalog, you're like, there's 49 different kinds of cabbage that you could grow. And some do better in hotter weather, and some do better in cooler weather, and some do better with more shade or more sun, and all of these things that you then can start to think about when you're planting your yard and say, well, I know this area doesn't get a lot of sun, but I still want to grow something in it.
Totally. Like one thing, I actually could not find the plant or the seed this year, but I grew last year this thing that was just labeled as Vietnamese coriander. And it does not look like culantro. It does not look like cilantro, but it has that same taste. Whoa. It looks like bamboo, honestly, like miniature tiny bamboo. And it's very pungent. And it was really good. And I dried a bunch of it last year, but it never went to seed and it never went to flower.
Where did you get the seeds for last year?
I bought it as a seedling at this, there's a garden center I really like in Long Island. That's like it's a independent store. It's a really big mega spot. And I think they're a little bit expensive, honestly, but they do get some really unique stuff there. So they had it as a seedling and I was like, oh, I'll try this. And I think I got to go back and check, but it looks like it may have overwintered or started to come back, actually.
Oh, cool.
Like 3 or 4 leaves were popping up from it, and it was definitely still that cilantro. But I'm like, I don't even know
what it is to find out.
Yeah,
that
I have literally no idea. I actually don't even know what it would be. I guess it's just called Vietnamese coriander. but it looks unlike... Yeah, it looks, I don't know, it just looks super different, and it's a much more intense cilantro taste.
So give me a quick tour, like, through your yard right now. Like, what are you growing today?
For myself?
Yeah, I mean, today is June 28th. So, like, what are you growing right now for yourself?
Yeah. Okay, so I actually just harvested a bunch of black raspberries. Which has been really exciting that those are in. We have several different kinds of chives. I'm trying to think of the things I've already eaten this year. basil, like I said, a bunch of different kinds of basil, cilantro, parsley, just all the herbs, basically. I have, probably 14 tomato plants, and those are probably 10 different varieties. Did I say figs?
Yeah, you mentioned your fig tree earlier.
I have 2 of them, so I'm extra excited about it. I have also butternut squash, kabocha squash, zucchini, 3 different kinds of eggplant. Wait, I'm going to look out my window so I can remember. Borage, 2 different kinds of radishes, 2 different kinds of arugula, lettuce, collards, 2 different kinds of kale, and something else. Oh, and I just harvested so much amazing garlic. And if like, oh, and cucumbers. I have a bunch of different kinds of cucumbers too. But the garlic I just pulled out of the ground, and that's one thing I'm super excited about. Because this is the second year I've grown it. But the first year I think that I was able to plant it in the fall, which I didn't realize that that's how you do it.
Right.
And I just love that bougie homegrown garlic. Like, it shouldn't be bougie. Like, I like that good hardneck,
right,
like nice fresh garlic, and not like, listen, I go through so much garlic that we definitely buy garlic.
Sure.
And I definitely use like mountains of garlic.
Right. No, you're not homesteading in Brooklyn. Like, you're not running a subsistence farm.
I did harvest 50 heads of garlic though.
Amazing.
So am I not homesteading? Because I also just made today a tabbouleh with some millet that was rescued from a business that was closing. And I used mint that I dried last summer to put in it, and mint that I grew this summer, and chives and scallion that I grew this year, and garlic that I grew this year. So it is funny. Yeah. Oh, and you know what else I put in it, Harry? Actually, I'm glad I'm talking to you today, because I remember last year you and I foraged some sumac.
Yes.
And I put a ton of sumac in this dish that I made today.
Nice.
Yeah, yes. So that was awesome. But yeah, so I don't know. I do grow a lot of the food that I eat.
Yeah,
I've also found the guy in my neighborhood that has chickens in his backyard and had swapped a couple times like plants for chickens with him. You know, oh, sorry, for eggs.
Yeah.
You know, and he lives in a brownstone in Bed-Stuy.
Right.
And has 12 chickens in his backyard.
This episode is brought to you by the Michigan Cherry Committee. Representing 75% of the U.S.-grown Montmorency tart cherry production, with over 100 articles published in health journals stating the vast health benefits of Michigan's superfruit, it's best to choose the cherry with more. U.S. Montmorency tart cherries. They're available year-round, dried, frozen, canned, juice, and concentrate. Learn more about the wonderfully U.S.-grown Montmorency tart cherry at choosecherries.com.
Do you think that the coronavirus pandemic has sort of, like, I don't know what the right word is, like, amplified the ability for you and other folks who are doing similar and related things in urban areas to, like, have you guys started to connect, and has that been amplified because of the coronavirus?
I would say yes, and I know that there are, gosh, off the top of my head, 5 different households that I have helped them start their first garden ever.
Mm.
And I don't know how many others, because with the seedlings, like, you know, a couple hundred would go out. I think we did 4 or 5 distros.
Right.
And I would just set seedlings on a table for, like, a low contact thing. And, like, I put it up on Instagram and Facebook, and the second or third time we had it, 75 people came.
That's amazing. I mean, it sounds very,
and that's
reminds
during the peak.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
You know,
right. When New York was completely shut down.
Yeah. I had 75 people come to my front yard to pick up plants to grow food.
I mean, it reminds me very much of, like, the idea behind the Victory Gardens that were heavily mm-hmm. promoted during World War I and World War II, where, you know, people were encouraged to grow their own food and can their own food because we were at war. And because
1,000%.
People, you know, the idea being that there were people who couldn't do that, who were either working as part of the war effort, either as soldiers or as support, and because there were people living in urban areas who couldn't grow that, right? You happen to be, and your neighbors, and there are a lot of people who do have some outdoor space, but at best, it's maybe 20% of people in New York City, probably less. That have access to space where they can actually grow something. So,
I disagree with
yeah?
you.
Yeah. Okay.
I think 100% of people have the space to grow something.
Okay.
And that's something I have been thinking on a lot.
Cool.
And I don't know. You're not going to have a full outdoor garden inside,
right.
But can you grow some things?
Sure.
Can you grow high nutrient things? Most definitely.
Yeah.
And, like, that is something that I do think of a lot, because I think just watching something go from seed to something you are going to eat is, like, physically nourishing, but also, like, really mentally nourishing, too.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to talk a little bit about that as far as, like, what else do you get aside from the nutrition and the deliciousness by growing your own food? Because there are other things that come with that.
Well, on a basic level, it means you have to put your phone down and touch dirt.
Right.
So it's like a time where you are very connected to what is right in front of you and what you are doing. And for me, that's a big, big mental break as someone who is like everybody else, just like on a phone or on a computer or screen all day.
And even more so now because we're all working from home. So you don't even have those moments of like sitting in a meeting. You're on your phone the meeting.
It's exhausting. Or I'm not even on the subway anymore. Like,
right.
And I'm really fortunate to be one of those people that can do that, to be very clear. Like, that is certainly, like, a privilege I'm very aware of. But I think that, like, being outside is important. And, like, for me, during the peak of the pandemic, like, as someone who also really deals with a lot of anxiety and depression, like, it really gave me something to do that was not just reading about how this virus was like decimating my city, which not that I'm disengaging from that or blocking it out, but you can't just look at that 24 hours a day. So the idea that I could watch plants grow really helped my mental state. And that was also a big part of why I wanted to share seedlings with people. At the end of the day, do I want everyone to grow their own food and have the capability and ability to do that? Hell yeah. If people take this plant though and it like dies, but like, and they didn't get much out of it, but like they really enjoyed watching it grow, like to me, that's enough.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it, there are, you know, it's a living thing that you're also nourishing and that you are, you know, interacting with. You know, there are tons of studies about, you know, people that gardening helps with longevity. I mean, you know, my grandmother is almost 90 and credits the fact that she gardens for how she's made it through the years since her husband died.
Wow. Feeling really isolated during the pandemic, I was alone in my house for a good chunk of it. Or at the beginning. At the beginning, as things were getting worse, my roommate who I live with was actually stuck in quarantine in Mississippi. So I was home just in my house by myself starting all these plants. And it did feel like, you know, here's just like a little bright spot of something that I can look at. And I think other people felt that way. Like people sent me messages and people wrote like handwritten notes that they left at my house just to like tell me how it just felt to see the plants and to be able to come in and take plants.
That's really cool. So what advice do you have for people who are like interested in getting started growing? I mean, this season is fairly well started, but it's not too late to start growing.
It's definitely not too late. Actually, I'm about to be starting my fall garden for the first time. And like trying to, that's not something I'm still really learning about. But my advice to get started, is that what you asked?
Yeah.
Think about what you like eating.
Right.
Which is what I do. Some people ask me like, well, what's the easiest thing to grow? And I guess for me, the easiest things to grow are the ones that I care about. They may need more care, but things that like, I'm not that into, like that feels like a chore.
Sure.
And I think that connecting to other people that have knowledge, a lot of the knowledge, and you and I have talked about this just in other plants, you know, you should totally Google what you want to do.
Right.
And use the internet as a resource. But if you can connect with other people and talk to them and start to learn the language, it's pretty great. It is like a weird secret society of gardeners. Cause like, it is, because you can tell, and I can tell just after like a couple hundred people have come through my house and picked up plants, like I can tell by the questions that people ask, like, well, how much gardening experience they have.
Right.
And like, when you meet another person who gardens and they start talking about, you know, germination rates or what goes well here, what, you know, those types of things, like it doesn't really matter so much what your differences are. If you can connect in that way, it is like a weird separate language and shared experience, which I think is cool too.
Right. Yeah. And what would you say, like, what's your number one pest growing in an urban environment?
I have to say that it changes every year.
Okay.
Which is the most infuriating thing, because I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Last year I got the squirrels to stop eating my figs because I bought a giant like tree net condom thing.
Right.
And then at the end of the freaking season, there was like tent caterpillars everywhere, which I've never even seen in New York.
Sure.
In my property.
Yeah.
Or in my yard. And then this year I've got, oh God, centipedes.
Huh.
Which, who knew? And less slugs, which I was like ready to fight these slugs this year, who are also a problem.
Yeah.
And a lot of people ask me about rats. I am thankful enough to not have to had interactions with rats in my garden, but I'm worried that that's going to happen this year because we've been having increased rat presence in the neighborhood.
Got it.
People also always ask, like, people who are starting the garden always ask if it's going to bring cats, which it doesn't. Although we have had a couple litters of kittens in the front of the house.
Okay.
That like street cats have left. But like pests, I don't know, you know, and this year, I mean, now I'm just ranting about this year. I was just so excited to like eat lettuce that I grew. And I was just like, what the hell is eating these lettuces? Like they're just like coming and eating a phenomenal amount of lettuce in one take. And like I was outside and it was these like very bold sparrows that were just like swooping in and like taking giant pecks at my lettuce. And I had to get netting to cover that as well. And I had never had that before. And they were doing it in front of me, like almost like making eye contact with me and just being like, you are never going to eat this lettuce. It is mine.
That's so interesting. I mean, in our garden in Rhode Island, we have had slugs have been a huge problem.
Yeah.
But I mean, we have tons and tons of birds around. The only plant that something is eating, and we think it might be the chipmunks, is the bok choy.
Oh, that's funny.
The bok choy is all completely just like shaved down to little nubs.
Yeah.
Everything else seems to be doing fine. You know, here and there, there'll be a piece missing. And the slugs have definitely been intense. But
the slugs are, I hate them. I hate them so much. I hate them. yeah, it's hard to sometimes figure out what is getting to your plant. It's funny because like I never had aggressive birds in my yard till this year. And I have another friend who he and I kind of started gardening the same year together. And he'd always be like, man, these damn birds keep coming and eating the top of my pepper plants. And I was like, what are you talking about? That doesn't happen. And I totally like just didn't even believe that was happening. And now I called him this year and I was like, I'm so sorry. You're right. Those birds are assholes. yeah, it's, I don't know. Like the pests are annoying. And then also just trying to find a way to like deal with them that is, not chemical based is really hard.
Right.
And then blight is like a big thing. And I just treated my tomato plants for early blight yesterday, which I can't totally tell if they have. But I am learning in my eighth year that if you think you have it, you should treat your plants early before it. Because once you know you have it, it's too late.
Interesting. What does early blight look like?
On the lower, on a tomato plant, like the lower leaves will start to turn yellow and then they get like brown cankers on them. And it will start to move up the plant and it could kill them. And I noticed that a couple of them have had that. If you have late blight, you're probably screwed. And I've had that. I had that last year and it was like, it's just so upsetting. and that said, I still, even though I had a tremendous amount of my plants die last year, or my tomato plants, it pushed me to actually start other things later in the year that I wouldn't have normally. Like I grew broccoli for the first time last year. I still got a decent tomato harvest. I just didn't have like what I usually have where like I dried a ton of tomatoes and like can a bunch of tomatoes.
Right.
And it's great to have friends like you because actually you're the one that taught me how to can stuff. And it's not something I would have ever really tried unless I saw somebody else doing it, probably.
Sure. Well, before we wrap up, since we're getting close to the end, I just would love to hear about, like, what are some groups, if people hear this and they think, all right, I'm going to do it, I want to get started, like, who can they reach out to find out a little bit more and maybe just get some, you know, some moral support in the city for gardening?
I mean, anyone can hit me up on Instagram. I'm cool. at Lucy Laser, L-A-S-E-R. Gosh, that's such a hard question. Let me think. I feel like it's tough. Like, I feel like, that's a really good question. Like, who's the groups? I feel like a lot of the groups that I work with are fairly autonomous. But I know that, like, the Queer Kitchen Brigade does a big gardening effort. There's another group that I'm involved with called Radical Gardeners that's those are like pretty decentralized groups.
Sure.
But I would say, like, I also am just a very nosy person. and if you see a community garden that is open and you see somebody gardening, like, I will oftentimes just pop in and be like, hey, what are you growing?
Yeah.
How is your season going?
Right.
And that's kind of how I got a lot of, like, knowledge and growth. And, like, that's actually how I met a couple of families who were just, like, gardening for the first time and, like, got to talk to them.
Right. I mean, you make a good point. Like, the community gardens are a really great place to start, especially if you live in an apartment where you don't have outside access.
Yes. And I will tell you, here's the thing. It depends on where you live, for sure. But I know that, because I think I always wanted to have a garden in New York, but I was like, oh, you can't get a spot in any of these community gardens. They're probably full with, like, people who've been in them for 20, 30 years. They are not. They are absolutely not. Some probably are. Like, I know that, like, in Williamsburg, that's probably the case. But I know, like, the community garden on my block has not a huge amount of members. They have more space. Right. I know that, like, the community garden around the corner from me has space. I went to a community garden in the Bronx that was, like, almost a city block size. And the woman who ran the garden was like, yeah, we don't really have any members.
Huh.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think maybe there's a perception of scarcity.
Right.
Because, like, property and space and land in New York is so expensive and hard to come by that maybe some people are dissuaded from trying to get a space in that. And I would definitely say, like, try to plug in with those things.
Right. Totally. Awesome. Is there anything else that you are working on related to gardening that you want to mention before we wrap up?
Actually, there's a really cool, one of the inspiring things that I've been, that has been really exciting to me is just, there's been a bunch of, like, autonomous gardens popping up. There's one in Bushwick that just started maybe 4 weeks ago. That was, like, the way it's been described to me was that it was, like, an empty piece of land that was owned by some kind of slumlord and that they are now occupying this land.
Cool.
And they took down the, like, plywood fencing and have just been planting food, and now they are also maybe a hub. They might be a hub for, like, either a free fridge, but they also do food distro there, and they have music, and they have, you know, like, a bunch of growing space and composting, because composting in New York hasn't been happening.
Right.
So those things, and, like, I was very happy to, like, bring them some supplies and, like, plants, and I'm really excited to just see people doing autonomous things. I'm also really excited about, like, the Radical Gardener gardening group that I'm involved in does a lot of, like, planting and in public space and also foraging and grafting, which I think is really cool. Where you graft, like, fruit trees onto non-fruit bearing trees
in
public.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Which is, like, totally not my expertise. But something, like, I'm really excited to know people that are doing that.
Yeah, that sounds super cool.
Yeah, because I just think that food is, like, a human right and people should have access. Like, that, at the end of the day, and I don't think I got to say this yet, like, food is political. What you put in your body is political. What you have access to is, and it needs to be more equal, and people need access to these resources, and it shouldn't even be a question.
Right.
And one of the things that I am really passionate, now I'm on a rant, is just increasing people's, like, resiliency and access to fresh and healthy food and to have a connection to where their food comes from.
Yeah.
You know, whether that improves your physical health Cool. But if it helps your mental health, if it like makes you talk to strangers in your neighborhood, like those things are really important. And I like, oh, now I'm just on a full fucking tear. Like I talked to a reporter a few weeks ago, actually, and I lost my temper with him quite a bit because he was like, well, don't you think everyone needs to eat organic food? And I was just like, fuck you, no.
Right.
I think everyone needs to eat what they can eat.
Yeah, and everyone needs to have food.
Everyone needs food, and I would never, ever be one of those people who's like, is that organic? I'm not going to eat that if it isn't.
Right.
It's ridiculous. And I think that I am just as happy to, like, be able to have a place in my neighborhood that sells fresh food, you know?
Yeah.
And I would never advocate ever that people ask me all the time, like, should I buy like organic dirt? And I'm like, buy dirt, get dirt.
Right.
Like whatever's in that dirt, even if it's not organic, is going to wash out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, anyway, I think it's important to point out that if you are planning to grow things directly in the soil in the city, mm-hmm. you should have your soil tested.
1,000%. That's because, a different issue.
Yeah, exactly. Different thing. But you should have it tested because lead more than likely is already in there and you don't want that in your tomatoes.
Don't grow in the ground in New York, period. Like container gardening is easy and I think is a good compatible system in New York City because our soil is so toxic. And I will say, like, dirt, gosh, I mean, dirt is also expensive, and that is also a thing that I think dirt is the most expensive part of gardening, honestly.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I feel frustrated about. I feel like if you want to grow, but here, can I say one more thing? Sorry, now I'm really, because I regret what I just said, saying like, don't grow in the ground. I do grow in the ground. You're right. I grow, my raspberries are in the ground. My figs are in the ground. But you know what? Like those aren't the predominant part of my diet. And like,
well, and some plants take up heavy metals and some,
yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's the thing I think to be careful of. I mean, I remember when I was first gardening at our apartment in Greenpoint, we did have the soil tested and I think most of that was a raised bed anyway. And it came back that it had very low levels of lead. But in the research I did at the time, you know, tomatoes are one of the things I think that people tend to try to grow because it seems worth it. As you pointed out, that's what got you started. And tomatoes do pull lead out of the soil and it accumulates in the
right.
fruit. So very specifically, especially because if you have kids, I mean, you know, like there's a lot of reasons to be careful of that. But in the amount of raspberries that you're eating, and, you know, I don't know that much about raspberries specifically, but like, you know, you may not be talking about getting that much lead any more than you would.
No, it's like I will be fortunate if I can get 8 to 10 pints of raspberries for the season. It fruits once. Right.
I mean, and that sounds pretty good. I mean, 8 to 10. I mean, you want to talk about like a value proposition. I mean, what, a pint of raspberries is probably $10 at the mm-hmm. farmer's market.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, if you're buying 10 of those, that's $100. And, you know, the plant, that's a perennial. So, like, that plant is going to, you'll have raspberries next year.
This is our fourth or fifth year having raspberries. And every year it gets larger and crazier. Same with the fig tree.
Right.
But and like I said, those are, but I would not want to like dissuade somebody from growing some stuff in their ground. I would dissuade people from growing everything, like starting a farm in that soil. Yeah. But like growing a couple of things, it's not going to kill you. Like, it's just not. There are other things. It's just not.
And we didn't even touch on growing things like flowers.
Oh, I don't even grow
cut
fucking
and bring
flowers.
Into your apartment to make it beautiful.
Sorry. Like, people always say, I have two rose bushes in the front, and it's because my roommate likes flowers, but I could care less. I couldn't care less. I couldn't care less about flowers, except I started growing borage this year, because someone gave me seeds, and they taste like cucumbers. So I was, like, into that. Have you ever tasted them? Yeah, I had never till this year. I don't know that I need to grow them again.
I mean, I love nasturtium.
I don't like them.
And the flowers are delicious.
I guess that's the other thing. Like, I just don't find them that appealing.
But that's the cool thing about what we're talking about is that you don't like them. So
I did one year.
And you can grow the stuff
because I had
like.
Never eaten them. I was like, oh, I'll grow these. They're flowers. I don't know. And then I was like, oh, these taste terrible. And you know, technically figs are flowers, right? So those are my flowers,
right,
I guess.
Sure.
And nice. All the vegetables have flowers. Now, yeah.
Yes.
Anyway. Totally. But yeah, don't grow flowers, grow food.
Well, thanks, Lucy. I really appreciate you taking the time and joining me on Feast Your Ears.
I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to Feast Your Ears today. There are a lot of benefits to growing things for yourself and your community. Don't be afraid to give it a try. You've got plenty of time to start plants now for the late summer and fall. You can reach out to Lucy via Instagram at LucyLaser, LucyLaser, if you have any questions for her. You can find Feast Your Ears as well as lots of other great shows at heritageradionetwork.org, on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please reach out if you have any questions. You can reach me via email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com, and you can follow me on Instagram @thefoodballer.
Feast Your Ears is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter, @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.